Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Kelly Jean Kelly, Alice Bryant, and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Kelly Jean Kelly.
Thailand saw several eventful days after a princess's name was officially entered and then struck down as a candidate for prime minister. Princess Ubulratana Mahidorn is the older sister of Thailand's king, Maha Vajiralongkorn. Observers say the move adds to the confusion about the upcoming March 24 election. The country has been under military rule since 2014. Next month's election could return it to rule by an elected leader, even if it is a largely authoritarian government that is friendly to the military. The princess's short candidacy was the first time a member of the royal family had tried to enter a political election. The princess and her relatives have traditionally been expected to rise above the usual political fighting. Official rules also prevent the royal family from participating directly in party politics. But Ubulratana says she does not have to follow these rules because she gave up her royal name in 1972 to marry an American. Her candidacy was seen as a challenge to current Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha. He is a retired general who has led the country under military rule since 2014, when his group seized power. He said he was competing in the upcoming election to keep law and order. But the princess's candidacy was quickly struck down. Her brother, the king, called it inappropriate and unconstitutional. Then the election commission disqualified her, saying members of the royal family must remain politically neutral. The party that nominated the princess said in a statement that it accepted the king's order. The party, called Thai Raksa Chart, is led by former Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra. He and his group have been in a years-long conflict with the royal family and people who support the monarchy. Thaksin was ousted in a 2006 coup after being accused of abuse of power and disrespect for the monarchy. George McLeod is a political risk expert based in Thailand. He said that by putting forward the princess as a prime minister, Thaksin took a chance and lost. But a professor for Southeast Asian Studies at Kyoto University had another idea. Pavin Chachavalpongpun said Thaksin may have achieved exactly what he wanted, forcing the Thai monarchy to engage publicly with politics and showing conflict within the royal family. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
Feeding birds is a popular way to watch wildlife during the winter months. But many bird experts say the experience is often more pleasant for people than for birds. And it might even put wild birds at risk. Feeding birds is not necessary for their survival, except in extreme weather conditions, said Stephen Kress. He is with the National Audubon Society, an organization whose aim is to protect wildlife. Feeders can definitely help them get through that kind of weather. Most birds eat insects and show little interest in bird feeders. For those birds, Kress suggests growing native plants in a natural environment. In addition, birds who do eat seed will be more likely to come to feeders if there is some cover nearby. This lets them feed and then fly to protective areas, such as in trees. The most common mistake people make with their bird feeders is incorrect placement. They put feeders where birds are frightened by foot traffic, risk being hurt by cats, or risk flying into windows. Kress likes the idea of setting up a bird feeder at least 1 meter away from a window. That way, if a bird gets frightened, it won't die when it hits the glass, he says. And he urges owners of cats to keep them inside the home so they can't hurt the birds. Learn which bird species are common to your neighborhood so you can avoid feeder wars and understand the social order. Some birds are more aggressive at feeders, Kress said. They eat a lot and do not leave much food for other birds. A solution is to put the food in more than one place by using different kinds of seeds and feeders. Niger seeds, for example, are a favorite of goldfinches. Tube feeders with wire covers prevent large birds from entering. Pay attention to seed quality and freshness. Unprotected seed left too long in feeders will turn moldy, and mold can kill wildlife. Refresh your feeders every few days and clean them often with a liquid of 10% bleach. Adam Ronke is a wildlife expert with Mississippi State University. He said people can feed birds more effectively by using black oil sunflower seeds, as it is the favorite seed of feeder birds. The added value, he said, is that it reduces waste seed on the ground, which appeals to other small animals. Ronke also said that bird lovers can increase the number and diversity of birds by using different kinds of feeders. For example, some birds, such as doves and towhees, live close to the ground. So they like lower feeders. Other birds like other things. Woodpeckers, blue jays, and songbirds, for example, like suet, a hard fat in meat. Orioles, bluebirds, and waxwings like fruit. Another word of advice: do not feed wild birds anything salty, like potato chips, or food that could choke them, like plain bread. I'm Alice Bryant.
Experts say there are about 6,500 languages spoken throughout the world. But the United Nations estimates that about half of these languages are in danger of disappearing. The UN Cultural Agency, or UNESCO, lists languages it considers endangered on its Atlas of the World's Languages in Danger. UNESCO collects information on the languages and then increases efforts meant to prevent them from dying out. One nonprofit organization seeking to save world languages is a New York-based group called WikiTongues. Officials from WikiTongues say the organization has a simple goal: to provide the tools and support that people need to save their languages. Daniel Beaugré-Udell is the co-founder of WikiTongues. He told VOA that when a language disappears, many other things can go away as well. For example, parts of a community's culture, knowledge, and identity can also be lost. Because of this, Udell believes the process of bringing languages back must be done by community members themselves, from the ground up, he said. There is no way an outside organization can save someone's language for them. WikiTongues was launched in 2016 as an open internet collection of world languages. The self-described community is operated by volunteers from around the world. The collection is in the form of language videos that people add to the WikiTongues website. WikiTongues says that even with the internet's wide reach, less than 1% of all languages are actively represented online. The organization seeks to serve as an internet resource to connect users who wish to keep a language alive. There are currently more than 400 languages and dialects represented on WikiTongues' YouTube channel. Some, like English, Farsi, and Mandarin, are spoken by hundreds of millions of people. Others are more uncommon. Bora, for example, is spoken by only a few thousand people in the Amazon regions of Peru and Colombia. Udell says more than 1,500 people from 70 different countries have added videos to the system. We have people from India who record dozens of languages, which is beyond their own, he said. We have another volunteer from Scotland who is one of the last speakers of a variety of Scottish dialects, Udell added. He's in the process of reclaiming them, revitalizing, and building a dictionary for them. Udell says there are many examples of languages that disappeared but later returned to use. Hebrew went extinct in the 4th century BC and was revived in the 1800s. Now, once again, it's the mother tongue of half of the world's Jewish population. Another example is the Tunica-Biloxi Native American tribe in the southern U.S. state of Louisiana. The tribe's language went extinct in the 1940s. But Udell says the tribe was able to successfully build up a language revival in recent years. One of WikiTongues' volunteers is Theron Musweo Kolokwa, who lives in Namibia. His native language is Subia, which is spoken by about 30,000 people along the Zambezi River in Namibia, Zambia, and Botswana. "I think in my language," Kolokwa said. I dream in my language. It's the language that I was born into. I didn't have the choice to speak it. However, he does not get the chance to speak his native language every day. Like many other educated people from his area, he speaks a lot of English and Afrikaans. Kolokwa is hoping his involvement with WikiTongues can help keep Subia and other African languages from going extinct. I want the world to know about my language, Kolokwa said. But his goal goes beyond just sharing his language with others through video. He is also working to create a dictionary and language teaching materials that can be used in schools. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Two summers had gone by since the start of the American Civil War, and the North had not yet won a major battle in Virginia. The Army of the Potomac, the strongest of the Union armies, had tried to seize Richmond, the Confederate capital. General George McClellan moved the army up to the very gates of the city. But then, General Robert E. Lee led his southern forces in a fierce attack. It smashed McClellan's army and drove them away from Richmond. Morris Joyce and Jack Moyles continue the story of the Civil War.
President Abraham Lincoln and his new Chief General Henry Halleck put together a new Northern force. They called it the Army of Virginia. They gave command of it to General John Pope, a successful fighter in the West. Pope began to move south toward Richmond. Halleck ordered McClellan to bring his army up to join Pope. Together, they could smash through the Confederate defenses around Richmond. Lee decided to hit Pope before McClellan could join him. He left a few thousand troops to guard Richmond, then took the rest north. Lee moved up to the Rappahannock River, across from Pope's army.
Lee sent Stonewall Jackson with 24,000 men on a quick march around the western end of Pope's lines. Jackson and his men marched more than 80 kilometers in 2 days. They got behind Pope and seized a huge northern supply center at Manassas. Pope moved to smash them. They burned the captured supplies. Then they moved a few kilometers away to a long, low hill just northwest of the Bull Run battleground, where Southern forces defeated a Northern army a year before. Jackson hid his troops in woods along the hill and waited for General Lee to arrive with the rest of the Southern army.
But before Lee could get there, Union troops, thousands of them, marched down the road below Jackson. Jackson decided to attack, to hold them there until Lee arrived with help. The fighting was furious. Neither side broke. The fighting died down at the end of the day, and Jackson's men moved back to their positions on higher ground. They made their lines along a partly built railroad on the side of the hill.
From his headquarters on the hill, Jackson watched the Northern forces prepare for battle. many thousands of the enemy were marching into position. Pope brought up all his soldiers, and others were on the way from bases near Washington. Several thousand of McClellan's troops, commanded by General Porter, were arriving from the south. It was a mighty force, much larger than Jackson's army. Jackson was worried. He sent an officer back to find General Lee. He sent a message. Lee must hurry. Jackson faced a big army.
Pope's army was large, but it was poorly organized. The men had been rushed into position. The order to attack was given before all the troops were ready. So, the attack began slowly, and Jackson was able to fight it off. But then, more and more Northern soldiers joined the fight. The two sides struggled for hours in the hot summer sun. Jackson's men almost broke. Men prayed for the long day to end. The sun seemed to stand still.
Finally, the sun went down, and the battlefield became dark. Jackson's men had held, but they paid a terrible price. Thousands were killed or wounded. Northern losses were even greater. Most of the Union troops had fought bravely. They had hit the Confederate lines time after time. But one large group of soldiers did not get into the battle at all that day. This was the group from McClellan's Army of the Potomac, led by Fitz John Porter. Pope had ordered Porter to strike at the right end of Jackson's lines. Porter took his troops several kilometers past Jackson's right and stopped them. His soldiers remained there all day, out of the battle. Porter said later, he believed the Confederate forces were too strong for his men.
Other groups of McClellan's men were arriving in Alexandria, 30 kilometers to the east. Pope asked that they be sent to help him. McClellan was ordered to send them immediately, but he refused to do so. He said they were not in condition to fight, and he would not send them. General Pope still thought he was facing only Jackson's army. He refused to believe reports that Lee had arrived on the battlefield with 30,000 more Southern soldiers. Pope thought Lee was still far to the west of Manassas.
Pope knew that Jackson's army had taken a terrible beating in the 2 days of bloody fighting, and he was sure that Jackson would try to withdraw the next day to retreat to the west. Pope divided his forces that night. He left thousands in place in front of Jackson's lines. The others were moved back. They were ordered to get ready for a march west to block Jackson's retreat. Pope made a terrible mistake. Jackson was not planning to retreat. He was waiting with Lee to smash the Northern Army. And that is what happened the next day.
North Northern troops attacked Jackson's lines. The fighting was bitter. Pope's forces almost smashed through. But then Lee ordered his men to move forward to help Jackson. Confederate artillery broke up the Northern attack. When the Northern troops began to retreat, Lee and Jackson attacked with all their might. Many of Pope's men were not prepared for battle. They were standing together in groups, ready for marching. They could not stop the Southern attack. The Confederates pushed Pope's army back across the old Bull Run battlefield.
Near the end of the day, Northern forces succeeded in organizing a stronger defensive line. The Southern attack slowed down, then stopped. Lee sent Jackson around the north end of Pope's line to try to stop the Northern retreat. Lee did not want the defeated Union Army to escape. He wanted to destroy it. But heavy rain held up Jackson's troops. They were discovered and attacked by a strong Northern force. Jackson could move no farther. He could not stop Pope's retreat to Centerville and Washington. The Northern Army escaped.
But it left behind thousands and thousands of dead and wounded. Confederate doctors treated their own men, then tried to help the wounded soldiers of the other side. General Lee permitted Northern medical wagons to return to the battlefield, and they began to carry the wounded back to Centerville. Groups of McClellan's army, arriving from Alexandria, met Pope's men in Centerville. They laughed and shouted at the tired, beaten soldiers. Many said they were glad that Pope had lost. One of McClellan's generals, Samuel Sturgis, greeted Pope at Centerville. "I always told you, Pope, that if they gave you enough rope, you would hang yourself."
What happened at Bull Run created bitter anger among the people of the North, anger against their military leaders. People felt that a year had been wasted, that thousands had died for no real purpose. The year before, Southern troops sent a Northern army fleeing from Bull Run. Now it was happening again. The Army of the Potomac was back where it started. As the facts of the battle became known, cries of anger became even louder. The people demanded answers. Why did McClellan and his men move so slowly? Why did they refuse to go to Pope's aid? Why did Pope let Jackson get behind him? Why were 14,000 soldiers lost?
Most members of Lincoln's cabinet believed McClellan was responsible. Treasury Secretary Chase said McClellan should be shot. War Secretary Stanton said he should be dismissed immediately. He and three other cabinet members signed a note demanding that Lincoln remove McClellan as commander of the Army of the Potomac. Lincoln agreed that what McClellan had done was shocking. He said it was clear that McClellan wanted Pope to fail. But Lincoln said he would not remove McClellan. He said he knew that McClellan was not an aggressive general. But he said McClellan was a good organizer who could build the defeated army into a strong force.
General Robert E. Lee, however, would not wait while McClellan rebuilt the army. He decided to carry the war to the north.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.